dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence brief on the war for the free world. And one of the men who has been, well, fighting in that battle space for a long time, both in uniform and in civilian capacities, notably now as the Vice President for Defense and Foreign Affairs at the highly esteemed Heritage Foundation, is our first guest, Jim Carafano. Jim is an author. He is a gifted speaker. He is a man who has been fulminating about the challenges that we're facing better and with greater effect than just about anybody. And it's always a privilege to have him with us. Jim, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio and Happy New Year to you.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
I'm hoping it's going to be a happy new year, but to take stock of what might be a problem in that period, it seemed to me we might do a quick tour d'horizon of where you see things developing, some of which perhaps may be not so happy around the world.
Well, I am not really looking forward to a successful new year, and that's why, because if you look at the list of the top five things to worry about, it kind of looks an awful lot like the list from last year. And what that tells you is how little progress, and in many cases, how much ground we've lost. So the number one thing on my list is, of course, Iran. So we cut this deal with the P5 plus one with Iran. It runs out in 6 months. I can guarantee you that nobody in the world is going to feel better and safer about the state of the Iran nuclear program 6 months from now. And so we will reach an existential crisis moment. The way the Iranians have engineered this, it's very likely that they'll be able to point fingers at the United States and blame us for the failure to make progress. And I think that the sanctions regime is just going to completely unravel. That basically leaves us with no plan A and no plan B for dealing with the Iran nuclear program.
Existential crisis, it seems to me, more likely will translate into a further extension of this so-called framework agreement. Is that how you read it?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the administration, rather than admit failure, the administration will just kind of let the Iranians play no rope-a-dope like the North Koreans and just hope that, you know, they don't go nuclear on their watch. So North Korea's on the list, which I guess doesn't surprise anybody. And I know we always expect bad things from North Korea, but I got to tell you, this assassination or the execution of the uncle, there are squirrely, scary things going on inside this country. And this thing could go in any direction. This is the first time everybody always expects North Korea to implode. This is the first time that I've heard the most serious North Korea watchers that I talk to and say this could be the year it happens.
Yeah. You know, Jim Carafano, I was talking with Gordon Chang about this yesterday, and he described an account, not necessarily true, but an account nonetheless, that the way this execution was conducted was to put this uncle of his, Jang, and five others of his lieutenants in a cell with ravenous dogs and allowed them to be torn to pieces, which the leader and his wife reportedly watched. Again, maybe not true, but it certainly sounds like the kind of thing this regime would engage in and would like to have be known for.
And the fact that there are stories out there like that that are, you know, credible. I mean, these are people that have nuclear weapons under their control. This could be the scariest year for North Korea ever. So the Middle East is on the list, and I just put it as the Middle East blank because there are so many different areas where this thing can just boil out of control. I mean, it just kind of defies mention. I mean, to me, the fact that Al Qaeda flaggers raised in Fallujah, for example, in Iraq, you know, there's not more demonstrable proof that this president squandered a bitterly won victory and is now, through his personal efforts of foreign policy and diplomacy, has engineered Iraq back to the point where it's more violent now than it was at the height of the
liberation.
2007 2007 before we started the surge. It's an incredible failure.
Right.
Incredible.
You know,
failure.
Jim, I was struck in reading about that this is, of course, from the president who repeatedly told us that al-Qaeda was on the path to defeat.
Right.
Not necessarily so, obviously, even when he said it, but it's becoming more and more evidence of national security fraud by the day, don't you think?
Well, and that gets back – that's number four on my list, which is al-Qaeda is back. I mean, that is just completely undeniable. I don't care if you want to call them al-Qaeda affiliates or whatever – but al-Qaeda is viciously active in several theaters, in some of the hottest hotspots in the Middle East, in Syria, in Iraq. For the first time, they have a foothold in Egypt in a major way. They're riddling throughout North Africa, incredibly destabilizing, and they're about to come back in Afghanistan, where we are actually seeing what has to be just a complete replay of the president's failure in Iraq, where we're going to coming out of Afghanistan in a way almost ensuring that the Taliban and al-Qaeda are going to be back. And they have to come back. They have to come back. Because what allowed al-Qaeda to flourish in Afghanistan to begin with? The Haqqani network and the Taliban. Haqqani network's never been stronger, and the Taliban are coming back. So al-Qaeda will definitely be, and they've never taken U.S. or American targets off their radar screen.
Jim, what sort of stitches through many of the things that you're worrying about, and rightly so. And again, our guest is Jim Carafano. He is Vice President for Defense and Foreign Affairs at the Heritage Foundation, formerly served in uniform in the United States Army, and has been writing and working hard on the sorts of challenges that he's just described. Talk a bit about this sort of connective tissue. I think of it as Sharia. It seems as though that doctrine, the supremacist program of these guys is on the march. And I was struck by a piece that you wrote at the Foundry, the Heritage Foundation blog at the end of the year, entitled Bangladesh Crisis is a Chance to Right the Fight Against Islamism. I think probably most of us are unaware that there even is a crisis in Bangladesh. Talk a little bit about it and how it does stitch in with this larger threat picture you've painted.
There is a crisis in Bangladesh. There's an election, national election that's going on now, and the government is basically running unopposed, in large part because they banned many of the Islamist parties. There is a resurgent threat in Bangladesh. The great fear there is the way the government is handling it is they may actually be throwing fuel on the fire and really empowering that threat. It's kind of the opposite of what we saw in Egypt. In Egypt, there was a terrible election that brought the Muslim Brotherhood to power, which was almost going to guarantee that was become an Islamist fascist state, that it would be a great danger to the United States. The military came in, threw that government out, and rightly so, to save the hope for the future of that country. Here we may actually have the opposite case, where this regime may be so authoritarian that it actually may increase the Islamist threat. So we may see the Bangladesh military throw these guys out. So, but here's a problem with President Obama. This is they have no vision on how to address this. Literally, they say, if you've had an election, you're okay by me. The Iranians have elections all the time, so the Iranians are okay by us. There is absolutely no sophistication, no focus on dealing with this global threat from this administration. And so you see that run through everything.
Yeah, more to the point, it seems to me if you're an Islamist, they have no problem with you either, whether it's
exactly
in Syria or Iran or, as you say, in Bangladesh, Turkey, and so on. Let me come back to something else, Jim, that I know you're following closely. As a graduate of West Point, as a lieutenant colonel in the Army before your retirement, you've been writing about what we're doing that is actually making matters worse. And that translates not into only policy that's delusional about these guys, but also hollowing out our military at a moment when you want to be dissuading these folks to the extent you can from acting aggressively.
Yeah, this administration is actually a triple threat to American security. On the one hand, you have them really embarrassing ourselves in front of allies across the world. I just got back from a major trip to Asia. Across the board, every country you talk to, they really doubt American commitment and the level of American attention being paid to really serious issues like China and Islamism and other things. So our allies are petrified that we are literally indifferent at the wheel. You add to that, this administration has gutted this military, because if you look at our military, which is this administration has gutted, there's a lot of talk about the sequester and everything. It's not the sequester that's gutting the military. The president put $500 billion of cuts on there before that. So our military is going to be in the worst shape it's ever been. We question our alliances. And then you add the third piece to that is look at the state of our economy. Look at the source of our strength. I mean, here we are years after a recession, high unemployment, little economic freedom. You know, the United States, this is incredible data point. The United States is the only country in the world where the level of economic freedom has declined 7 years in a row.
Wow. Jim, this is a subject for a longer conversation on another occasion. I appreciate very much you taking the time with us. Jim Carafano of the Heritage Foundation, thank you for your past service and your continuing great work at the Heritage Foundation. Keep it up. We'll talk with you again very soon.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Olivier Goethe. He is a very impressive intellect on matters involving the nexus between our challenges posed by Islamists and the freedoms that we take for granted in countries like the one he's living in at the moment, the United Kingdom, and for that matter, our own. Olivier is the director of research at the Henry Jackson Society and an expert on counterterrorism matters, who's been briefing widely in government circles and also appearing frequently in the media. Interestingly enough, he spent 12 years as a portfolio manager in New York, so he knows the business side as well. Olivier, welcome back. It's good to have you with us. Happy New Year to you, sir.
Happy New Year, Frank. Always a pleasure to be on.
Listen, we've been talking of late about Britain, the Islamization of it. Soren Kern, a colleague at the Gatestone Institute, has written impressively on some of the latest and very worrying developments in the UK. This really seems to be evidence of the accelerating progress of what the Muslim Brotherhood calls civilization jihad. Give us a quick sense of what the Brotherhood's presence in the UK is and the danger it represents there, you think?
Listen, it's not by chance that the French security services came up in the 1990s with the term Londonistan to describe London as the main hub for terrorists of all kinds. Really, it has been going on, I would say, since the early 70s, when a lot of Arab banks set up shop in London and were, even to some French sources, agreed that there was a golden goose and that there was an agreement between the UK and some Arab states, especially in the Gulf, as far as being able to host Islamists and then get in return funding.
We're visiting with Olivier Goethe. He is an expert on the matters involving the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamism more generally at the Henry Jackson Society, where he is the director of research. And we were just talking about the sort of, well, Faustian deal, I guess you might call it, between Britain and the Arabs that translates into accommodation of Islamists if they bring money. How is that manifesting itself now in terms of infrastructure build out and increased aggressiveness on the part of these Islamists in the United Kingdom?
It's interesting that things have turned around, because you've seen how mostly Saudi Arabia has been turning its back on the Muslim Brotherhood and now see the Muslim Brotherhood as the biggest enemy. So whole funding has changed from, I would say, Saudi Arabia to actually Qatar. Qatar was the main country that's funding the Muslim Brotherhood worldwide. And so it's just a matter of switching sides. But as far as the process of penetration of the Muslim Brotherhood within Britain and Europe, this has been going on, as I mentioned, for the past 40 years, unabated, especially since our politicians, both in Europe and unfortunately sometimes in the U.S., do not view the Muslim Brotherhood as a threat in any shape, way, or form.
Yeah, to the contrary, they seem to be very much embracing it, certainly in our own government, and I get the impression that that's happening in the United Kingdom as well. Let me just tick off a couple of things that Soren talked about, just to get a sense of whether you agree that these are happening and are manifestations of the kind of accommodations that have been made at the governmental level or societal level. We've got Muslim gangs masking themselves as the Muslim London Patrol, who are saying this is a Muslim area and we need Sharia. We've got Sharia courts operating in Britain to the great detriment of women there. Sex crimes, including Muslim taxi drivers raping female passengers, and a British judge apparently saying no woman can expect to be safe while traveling in a cab in Britain. And this so-called child grooming business of Muslims trafficking and torturing and raping British girls. This sounds like, you know, the unraveling of Western society in Britain. Is this overstating the problem as you see it, Olivier Guiteau, or is it just sort of early indicators of where this thing's headed?
Honestly, it's been a while that because of that whole veneer of multiculturalism that Britain has been, I would say, at the avant-garde of really being a place of very good location for Islamists and especially the Muslim Brotherhood. They've gone a step forward compared to any other countries in Europe as far as accommodating the Muslim Brotherhood, because they see that as either not wanting to infringe in the culture of some Muslims within Britain society. But as well, it's been really problematic to see how naive the approach has been, and how really now it has gone to a certain level whereby now Muslim Brotherhood exiles from Egypt are actually setting shop in London. So it's not just the European movement that is getting traction in Britain, but now you have the leadership, which makes it even more troublesome than it was before.
Yeah. And has there been in Britain, as we've certainly seen in the United States, Olivier, a kind of delusion that as long as these Islamists are not engaging in violence, they're okay. They're in not only okay, that they are to be embraced and promoted and legitimated and otherwise supported as the antidote to these violent types, even if their purposes are exactly the same, or their objectives at least are exactly the same, namely the imposition of Sharia.
Actually, it is true that they've been really embraced. The problem now is that compared to just a year ago, they're being seen as victims with whatever happened in Egypt. And so they're getting another dimension that we didn't have before. I would put to you that some in the British spheres were reaching out because they were seeing them as a way of shelter, indeed, as you said, to avoid violence on the streets. But now they're being seen as victims. So they have the moral high ground, which they didn't have a year ago. So I would put to you that the situation is much worse than before.
So, and when you say they, you're specifically speaking of Muslim Brotherhood leaders who are now transplanting themselves as victims from Egypt to Britain and being given an opportunity to operate their global sort of Sharia civilization jihadist program from the United Kingdom safe haven.
That's correct. And that's really something else. I mean, there is, you know, as soon as Egypt put the Muslim Brotherhood and classified it as a terrorist organization, the SCO here came up quickly with an answer saying that Britain doesn't see the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization at all.
We have to leave it at that, Olivier. I'm frankly very anxious to continue this conversation and hope we'll have a chance to visit with you early and often in 2014. Thank you for the work you're doing at the Henry Jackson Society and specifically for the insights on what the trajectory is that clearly these brothers and these Islamists more generally have in mind for all of us, now becoming more and more manifest in one of our most important allies, certainly our most important European ally, Great Britain. God bless you, sir. Keep it up. And we'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, we'll visit with Andy McCarthy on this same subject, only what's happening in America with the Brotherhood and the stealth jihad.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors,
dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families, retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
This is Frank Afting with the Secure Freedom Minute. Now is the winter of discontent for many Republicans. They're furious with House Speaker John Boehner and his lieutenants for trying to pass an amnesty for illegal aliens. Critics have taken to calling such GOP leaders undocumented Democrats. Then yesterday, scores of prominent conservatives, retired senior military officers, and family members of the fallen wrote Speaker Boehner a sharply worded letter. It faulted him for failing to get to the bottom of the Benghazi Gate scandal by establishing at last a special select committee to investigate it properly. With the American people increasingly turning against President Obama and his record of national security and other frauds, Republicans should come together to oppose, not abet, his open border policies and to hold him accountable for his dangerous submission to Islamists abroad and at home. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. Well, it is a red letter day here. We are able to speak for the first time in 2014 with our good friend Andy McCarthy, the star of stage and screen, most especially much in evidence these days, I'm happy to report, in all the right places, Fox News and in the usual outlets, of course, National Review Online and PJ Media, but also splendid publications elsewhere. on matters of direct relevance to the topic at hand, namely the security of the United States in a dangerous world. And I just can't help, Andy, but ask you, first of all, after saying welcome back, good to have you with us and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Frank. Great to be here.
Thank you. Well, just to pick up on the themes that we were talking about a moment ago with Olivia Guita of the Henry Jackson Society in the United Kingdom, I understand you've been reflecting on the special relationship and the extent to which we seem to be locking arms and going down the tubes in embracing the Muslim Brotherhood. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on that score on both sides of the pond.
Well, Frank, when I was away for a little bit of a mental health break, which life in America in 2013 certainly
requires,
I needed one. I had the good fortune of reading a symposium in the New Criterion put together by our friend Roger Kimball regarding the special relationship and the prospects of it, especially in a very post-Reagan Thatcher era. And it seemed to me, the thing I came away from it with was that Britain really has a big decision to make. I mean, they're at a real crossroads with respect to, whether they want to continue to be sovereign or whether they want to join the dysfunction of Europe and all that that entails. And I think the sort of things that that you and Olivier were talking about are the same, the same confrontation that they're dealing with there. The loss of sovereignty means that, basically you're under the thumb of the European Court of Human Rights and European standards with respect to what they regard as fundamental rights and, immigration standards and the like, which, unfortunately, I think, Britain has always had, up until a certain point recently, had its own ideas about, how life in Britain ought to be lived. And the more European they become, I think the less secure they become.
Indeed. Andy McCarthy, if it were just a case of losing their sovereignty, it'd be one thing. It seems as though they're losing their minds. And talk about a need for a mental health break.
That's unfortunately something that's not restricted to Britain.
No, unfortunately. And that's kind of where I want to come to next is, we've had, as Olivia was reporting, not only the rising tide of sort of Islamist aggression becoming less and less the kind of civilization jihad and more the kind of, in your face, in some cases even criminal and violent kind of behavior that is all about, it seems, imposing Sharia or imposing their demands on submission to their program. But that seems to be happening a lot here, perhaps not quite to the extent, but I just wondered what your thoughts are. You've written, of course, in so many of your books, The Grand Jihad and Willful Blindness and so on, about the extent to which we're on the same trajectory, perhaps not quite as far along. Do you see that continuing to be the case given the loss of mind on this side of the pond?
Well, look, I think the problem is, as you identify it, that we are we're on the same trajectory. We're not where they are yet. I don't think if drummer Rigby or his equivalent in the United States were beheaded in the street on film, that we have reacted to it with quite the quiescence, I guess.
Supine comes to mind.
Yes. I think there'd be a different manner of reaction. But at the same time, I don't think it would be the same reaction as if the same thing had happened here 20 years ago. And I do think that you would have a political class that, much like what happened at Fort Hood, would be scrambling for the microphones not to demand that we finally deal with the threat against us, which is much broader than just than terrorism, but would be running for the microphones to make sure that we kept our diversity and that we went out of our way not to blame the ideology that is fueling all of this.
Well, we mustn't give offense, after all. Right. That's
really
important.
Yeah, but here we are saying the Brits are crazy. And, I think if you looked at America in 1994, we would have thought that America in 2014 is crazy.
Yeah, no, I think that's very important.
We're on the wrong end of history as far as that goes.
Yeah. Andy, let me ask you about another matter that's in the news at the moment. A number of conservative leaders and senior military officers, now retired and family of the fallen have come forward in recent days to express concern about the lack of a serious investigation in the Congress about this Benghazi Gate affair. You've studied this closely. Among other things, you've done very important work assessing, for example, the extent to which a woman like Huma Abedin, who was at the right hand of Hillary Clinton during this period, has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. And I just wonder, is what we're up against here, in your judgment, in part at least, a function of policies that were struck and followed before as well as during and after the episode in which four Americans were killed on the 11th of September in 2012, that is continuing to be, you know, actively followed and therefore efforts to expose it and challenge it and hold people accountable for it are being suppressed?
Frank, I don't see that there can be any question of this. And I go back, since you mentioned Huma Abedin, I go back to something we jointly said during the period of time that was all going on, which is we had exactly five U.S. representatives out of 535 members of Congress who were willing to step up to the plate and say people with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, an anti-American organization that makes no bones when it's talking among itself about its intention to destroy the United States and destroy the West. We have five representatives out of 535 who don't say the Muslim Brotherhood connected people in our government need to be prosecuted. They merely say, how do they get security clearances? And the reaction of the political class...
And what impact are they having on policy as well?
Right.
Right.
And the reaction of the political class in Washington is not to examine itself and investigate the Muslim Brotherhood-connected officials. It's basically to deride and run out of town, the five messengers who say, what are we doing here? So what we argued at the time was the way Washington reacted was only going to encourage this kind of behavior, because politicians being politicians, when they saw what happened to those five, the next person was not going to step up to the plate.
Heading for the tall grass, as they say.
Exactly. This is what happens. And
the trajectory continues. We stay on track for submission and worse. In the minute we have left, I just want to very quickly ask you to talk on one other subject. These so-called undocumented Democrats in the Republican leadership are also apparently poised to try to push through the House of Representatives in one form or another, something that amounts to amnesty for illegal aliens. This comes at the time that the Obama administration, of course, and its friends on the Hill on the Democratic side especially are saying, well, never mind immigration law. Let's make things worse, actually. What is your reading on the implications of the failure to enforce the existing law, let alone to make it even weaker?
I think you could say this across the board about the Obama administration, but we're going to see it in particular with immigration in the next few months. And that is, if you don't hold the executive branch accountable and you have Alinskyites running the government, you know, their MO is to push to see how much they can get away with. And if they don't see any opposition, they don't worry about niceties like laws and judicial opinions and that sort of thing. You know, they impose their agenda. And if the Republicans, after 5 years of demonstrating that they will be, to borrow your word, against supine in the face of all this, then we're going to get some very bad law. And it's going to be at a very bad time for the middle class in the United States.
It's not just a matter of there being no opposition. It's being actually aided and abetted, it appears, at least according to some reports of the House leadership. Andy, we'll be following it closely in 2014 with your good help. I am so grateful to you for it. Thank you for the work you do at National Review Online and PJ Media and so many other places. Keep it up and come back to us again next week. Next up, we'll be talking with Kyron Skinner about, replacing Reagan's peace through strength with the hope for peace despite weakness. How's that for a formula for success? Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them.
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com. Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined, I'm very pleased to say, by Dr. Kyron Skinner, one of the country's preeminent historians and thinkers and deep practitioners about matters involving this battle space of the war for the free world. She is the Glenn Campbell Research Fellow at the Hoover Institution, the founding director of the Center for International Relations and Politics at Carnegie Mellon University, and the author of numerous books, including most recently Turning Points in Ending the Cold War. But Kyron, welcome to you and Happy New Year to you. Thank you for coming back. Good to have you with us.
Thank
Thank you for inviting me.
I wanted to sort of start off with another couple of books that you've written, chronicling my old boss Ronald Reagan's experiences and policies, notably Reagan in His Own Hand and Reagan, A Life in Letters. He was, as you know and have done so much to document, a serious student of and again, practitioner of the philosophy of peace through strength. He promoted it, I think, with great effect. What do you make of what seems to be a very strong deviation from that practice under the present administration? I think of it as kind of hoping for peace despite weakness.
I like the way that you put it. And in fact, I would extend it, the absence of peace through strength, well beyond President Obama. And when we look at Reagan, when he left the stage in January 1989, I think he was the last president to really use peace through strength as a principle that would be applied to public policy, sadly. We haven't seen anyone hold up the role of the United States in the world quite the way that he did. But in particular, in the Obama administration, what we're seeing is a violation of what it means to be the predominant power on earth. And that's what's so particularly troubling, because the United States is nearly half the world's defense spending. It has the strongest GDP in the world of any particular country. The EU, as a collection of countries, is stronger, but not, you know, pull Germany out and there's no EU. So if the United States doesn't move with strength, with determination, with clarity, much of the world doesn't work very well. And that's not a normative statement. It's a statement of fact of when you've got a great power and one that's been historically as generous as the United States, one that Reagan often referred to the fact has no territorial ambition and has done enormous good to make international institutions work, to kind of enforce international norms. When the United States doesn't act in a way to make institutions, norms, states behave, much of the world goes in ways that are not consistent with American values. That's what we're seeing right now.
And Kyron, going one step further, I think what's implicit in what you've said, but just to draw you out on it, what you actually can predictably get is a vacuum of power that is filled by others and that will, in fact, not simply be contrary to sort of our values, but diametrically opposed to our interests and security. And I want to sort of drill down quickly in the space of the time we have with you on a couple of examples. Iraq, at the moment, the president has withdrawn lock, stock, and barrel from Iraq. We're seeing the vacuum there filled by al-Qaeda on the one hand within the Sunni communities and Iran on the other. As you witness what's happening in Fallujah and Ramadi and in Anbar province, despite what we did, what do you think the likely repercussions are?
Well, Iraq and Syria, Iran, when you look across the broader Middle East and the Levant, it's in what's going on. It's not completely the responsibility or the result of the Obama administration's absence of a Middle East policy, which I think we could safely say is the case. But in fact, the U.S. has signaled that if there is a national security policy of this administration, it is the declaratory policy that the president has stated over and over again, that we will not fight wars. We will end wars, whether they, in fact, have ended or not. We consider a war to be over when we exit. That's what was declared in Iraq a couple of years ago, and then followed quickly by Afghanistan, which we will exit later this year. All over the place, the view of the administration stated by not just the president, but his national security team, is that we are coming home. In the absence of any kind of organizing state to kind of allow democracy to grow, civil society to grow, and to hold down forces that don't want Western values in place, you get a resurgent al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is very serious and very dangerous. It's fueling the al-Qaeda and its affiliates in Syria, making it almost impossible now that the U.S. has waited, you know, more than 2 years to do almost anything there, for us to go in and find the rebels that we would want. The Islamists are all over the place. They're at every corner. And it's made Iran look at Iraq with greater skepticism and say, basically, we can kind of push a Shia revival. That makes the Saudis all the more nervous, and they can begin to think about the possibility of having their own nuclear weapons program. One has to say that the United States is at the center of this mix. Not that some of these forces would not have taken place if the U.S. had been there, but the absence of the United States, the lack of U.S. willingness to have a Middle East policy that anyone understands, has made it possible for the Islamists to basically come out of the woodwork, and that's what's going on. It's a much more dangerous region. There's going to be much more bloodshed. 200,000 people dead in Syria because the U.S. cannot help organize the region, despite the fact that all of our regional allies have been asking for the U.S. to help provide leadership and to help them do their job, not just the U.S. alone. It's so troubling.
Yeah, it is troubling indeed, especially from the historical perspective that you bring to this, Dr. Kyron Skinner, with Carnegie Mellon University, where she is an associate professor of political science and the author of numerous books of relevance. Let me turn to another region of the world and ask you again to look at what's been happening as the United States is disengaged and others fill the void. You've served on the Chief of Naval Operations Executive Panel for many years, Kyron. What do you make of the declaration apparently today that the Chinese are now extending to much of the ocean areas of the South China Sea, something akin to this air defense identification zone that they adopted recently with respect to its airspace, specifically saying that foreign flagged fishing vessels must now have their permission to enter and operate in international waters in the South China Sea. And what does it mean for our security interests that this is happening?
Under President Obama, we've seen the Chinese have a very careful and deliberate strategy of expanding their power in the Indo-Pacific region. And this is yet one more example. As you know, the president announced his administration actually a pivot toward Asia. The person to really announce this was Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on behalf of the administration before she left office, more than a year before she left office. And the goal was to shift toward Asia to help prepare the U.S. for peaceful competition with China, especially in the trade arena, which I think makes sense. But what didn't make sense, and which I think in fact has further encouraged the Chinese in an expansionist mode, is that while the U.S. was pivoting toward Asia, the Middle East was going up in flames. The Arab Spring became something of a nightmare.
And we were hollowing out our military at the same time. Kyron, I'm afraid we're out of time. There's so much more to talk with you about. I hope you'll allow us to do so again in the near future. I wish you again a happy 2014. Thank you for the work you're doing at CMU and with the government and elsewhere. Keep it up. Come back to us. And I hope the rest of you will do the same again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.